This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Happy New Year. This is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. I hope that everyone had a safe and enjoyable celebration on this past New Year's Eve. And as we go into 2022, I want to wish each and every one of you a very healthy, happy, and prosperous New Year. I plan on attending a lot more conventions. I've already gone to a lot of them this past year in 2021 and giving you my daily reports as we've done in the past on the podcast, and I plan on doing that here as well. I unfortunately will not be attending the SAM convention in Las Vegas as I had originally planned because of a postponed performance that I had been contracted for prior to COVID, which meant it has been postponed four different times. And so they had already paid the deposit and I was already planning on attending. And then when they finally came down on the absolute drop dead date, it was going to fall during the middle of the SAM convention. And well, I already was under contract and I promised them I'd do that. And so unfortunately, I'm going to miss that one. But then we'll later that following week be going to Columbus, Ohio, where I'll be attending Magi Fest, and I hope to see some of you there as well. After that, then I head to Florida for a short lecture tour, and then later to Los Angeles for some filming of a television show. More about those details as they come, and that should be some fun then too. But this week's episode is brought to you by the Friends of the Magic Word, and this week we want to welcome the newest friend, actually someone who had slipped under the wire for the last person to give us a donation in 2021, and that is Ken Dickensheets. And I thank you, Ken, for putting your money where your ears are, so this way we can continue to produce this podcast into the future. We thank each of the Friends of the Magic Word who have donated over the years. Some have made one-time donations. Others have made ongoing pledges. Some have reduced their pledges. Some have deleted pledges. Some have increased their pledges. And whether you have given a small amount or a large amount, whether it's been a donation or whether it's been an ongoing pledge, a friend is a friend for life. And so if you join the Friends of the Magic Word, you will always be on the Wall of Fame. If you go to the MagicWordPodcast.com website, you can see a place there where it says become a friend of the Magic Word, and you can see the many people who have pledged or donated at least something over the past several years to the Magic Word. And I thank each and every one of you for all of your support with that. Speaking of friends, we have lost quite a few of our friends in the magic community this past year in 2021. If you go to the MagicWordPodcast.com, there you will see the Magician's Valhalla, I call it, which is the Hall of the Kings and Queens of Magic. So this way you can see and read the names of those who have passed during this last year. And I was surprised. I kind of had forgotten some of these people had passed because some time has gone by since it was originally reported. And their loss diminishes me. So aloha, my friends. And for the names of all those people, again, I encourage you to go to the website. And if you subscribe to the pod letter, those names were listed in this week's issue. Well, going back a moment to when I was mentioning some of the conventions I had attended in 2021, one of them was the Trix Convention, that's the Tri-C's, that was in Charlotte, North Carolina. While I was there, I had an opportunity to sit down and chat with a friend of mine whom I've been wanting to talk to for quite some time, and I see on a regular basis at other conventions like Obie's 4F convention, and that is Mike Powers. Mike is someone who many of you know, but is really one of those underground guys because he really doesn't perform on a professional basis, but he does have some incredible magic chops. I mean, we talk about someone who is really skilled at cards, it's this guy, and that's really his specialty. He was a longtime teacher and has retired from that and has devoted more time now to studying magic, but he has some interesting perspectives and also some interesting things which he teaches in his books. And also this week, a little spoiler alert, the conversation we have this week will include an explanation for a trick that Mike teaches, and that's known as science friction, where a straw is balanced on top of a salt or a pepper shaker at a restaurant, and it moves imperceivably It's incredible, impromptu trick. And if you haven't seen it, it is amazing, particularly the first time that you see it. It's hard to explain. And because he is a science teacher, he's actually teaching you some science rather than teaching you a trick. Maybe that's a way of looking at it. So he's really not exposing something here so much as he is explaining a scientific principle. So anyhow, not exposure. This is mainly geared towards magicians who are listening anyhow. And so this was an opportunity for you to learn something from a master who came up with this idea. As far as I know, he's the person who originated this then too. And he talks a little bit about that as well as so many other things. And I'm going to step out of the way. I think I've spoken long enough here on the front end. I've got a few more things I want to mention on the back end of this as far as resolutions for 2022. And so we'll come back to that at the end. But for now, please welcome my friend, Mr. Mike Powers here on The Magic Word. We have with us today someone I've been wanting to sit down with and talk to for a long time, someone who is an inventor, a creator, a mathematician, a scientist, a magician, and just a little bit of everything.
A skydiver.
You're a skydiver also?
Just three times. But I just
Well, that's three times
that,
more than I have.
Just wanted to throw it in there.
A little bit. What am I leaving out then over there, Mike? What else have you done?
Man, well,
I mean, like a swashbuckler. I mean, you ever worked
traveler? No, you hit all the main stuff. Yeah, a teacher. I mean, that was where
yes,
I used
I mentioned
all
teacher.
Those skills. Yeah.
So let me introduce. By the way, here he is, Mike Powers. Hi there,
okay.
Mike.
Sorry, I jumped in a little bit ahead of time there. I just wanted to throw the skydiving thing at you.
Yeah.
A little surprise.
Well, no, you didn't do any magic while you were skydiving, did you?
Oh no.
Okay.
I was too scared.
I assume, obviously, you had some sort of a little bit of training prior to that, so that way you...
It was a tandem jump, mm-hmm. and yeah. So you have a guy on your back who's
right.
jumped like 6,000 times.
And he pulls a cord for you.
And just, you know, I don't want to, you know, we're going to talk magic, but yeah. get the skydiving out of the way real fast here. Anyway, I recommend it. It's a fantastic experience, but you got to do it twice. The first time is shock and awe. Mm-hmm. Even I didn't really have fear, but it was just... what's going on? It's like
right.
it's like nothing you've ever done. And second time, you're freed from that, and now you can go, wow.
And kind of look around and enjoy the beauty.
You got to do it twice.
Okay, good advice.
All
I
right.
want to try that sometime.
Right.
I think that Joyce Weiberg had done that for her 80th birthday. And, of course, you know,
George
Herbert Walker Bush,
H.W. Bush,
H. Bush
yeah.
had done that, you know,
yeah.
in his 90s.
That's
you know,
right. Was, that was really cool to hear
yeah.
that.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have an interest in flying or anything? But just as a quick aside here, sorry, before
well,
we get started.
Yeah, well, we're really digging back into my childhood dreams, my literally dreams. I always wanted to fly, and I think maybe skydiving,
like
even
Superman?
Late in the game. Yeah, like Superman.
Sure.
And so, yeah, yep, you that was my dream as a kid was flying dreams.
Uh-huh.
And maybe this was my attempt to kind of finally really do it, you know, because it does
yeah.
feel like you're flying.
Did you think about actually... getting into piloting or being in aviation of some type rather than teaching?
I have entertained the thought even this late in the game mm-hmm. of getting a pilot's license
mm-hmm.
because I just think flying is really cool.
Yeah.
Gliding would be the one, you know.
So quiet.
Mm-hmm. So quiet. It just when you see those videos of these guys doing it,
mm-hmm.
just and you know
yeah.
it's just like that's
just white noise
yeah
mm-hmm.
it just seems really cool so
mm-hmm.
well maybe you're getting me back you know to revisit that and next time I talk I'll go hey want to go flying
yeah I might like to do that although I remember Howie Schwartzman was a pilot and
yes.
he would do different things and bank around like oh you know or he'd let you have the you know be the co-pilot, you know, and then he'd say, oh, something's gone wrong, and he'd be jacking
oh,
with you, and you'd
oh,
just
man.
About be puking, and, you know.
Well, I never had that experience, but I know Howie was a pilot.
And a prankster.
And a prankster, and a raconteur in the best
yeah,
sense of the word.
Exactly.
You know, he really was.
Well, you knew Howie from way back when. I mean, certainly from his early days as well. You are in Indiana, is that right?
Yep. Northwest Indiana,
okay.
near South
yeah.
Bend. It's called LaPorte.
Mm-hmm.
People would know South Bend. They wouldn't know LaPorte very
yeah.
likely.
And, but talking about Howie, because I know he goes the 4F, or used to, you
yeah.
know, until he passed here a while back,
yeah.
And was an integral part of all that. And he just was, and played the piano
oh.
so well, gosh.
Jazz piano. He was a badass piano player.
Mm-hmm.
One time they had a keyboard set up. What's his name? The jazz piano player that goes to Fechter's. Oh, I should know his name off the top of my head. But it'll come at some point. Anyway, the piano was there. It was a keyboard.
Yeah.
And I just went, geez, this guy is really good.
Yeah.
Howie was really good. I mean, he was a really good card technician.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some video of him at a St. Louis Jubilee sitting on the floor. I think I posted it It's probably on YouTube or Vimeo or something somewhere. Yeah. And he's doing all the moves, his pass. He had one of the great passes with these tiny hands that he had. He's a very short guy, mm-hmm. as you know. And he could do the moves, diagonal palm shift, all the tough stuff, flawlessly.
Yeah.
And he was fun. We would, you know, say, he's a pain in the ass, but he's our pain in the ass. You know, I just accepted him how he was and never had any bad feelings about him.
He reminded me of Jay Marshall.
I think
in
that's
many
right.
ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right.
In which he was just kind of an imp, if you will. You know?
That's right. And a jokester. Like Jay, at Fechter's, Jay would, if there was a dead time, Jay would just stand up and do a joke because he could see OB needed to fill a couple
kill
minutes.
Some time, yeah.
You know? And they were really some really great jokes, too.
They really were. And of course, the days before everything was politically correct, things were different back in those older days. And
they
even,
were.
Yeah. and there were things that were said that wouldn't pass, certainly today, by any means.
Probably. But then, you know, sometimes if you're old enough, I think, speaking of George Herbert Walker Bush, mm-hmm. I think in his 90s, he was like pinching, you know, the butts of the nurses, mm-hmm. and it's just sort of like, you know, it's fine. You know, he's 95 years old.
Yeah.
You know, the former president of the United States. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do? Call him out? You know, let it go.
Yeah.
So you got to let some stuff go sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've been attending then for the long time, of course, Two Fechter's, and going back, you have been a chronicler of that by posting a lot of photos, plus mm-hmm. also working and putting together PDF. And you've had the what was the show you do on Fridays?
You'll remember the Pat Page workshop.
Teach a Tricks? Or?
Yeah, it's a themed Teach a Trick. And yeah. I think did he do it as themed?
Didn't Roger Clouse do that first and then
Roger
Page,
Clouse or? Did Teach a Trick, and it was just sort of just a trick, right? There wasn't a theme.
Right.
And I think Pat Page's was a theme, and we continued with that.
Right.
Or else we converted
it was like
into
business cards or...
Yeah, rubber bands,
right.
Tricks with sticky stuff, uh-huh. double facers and double backers, you know. And then so all the people that volunteered to do things, you had to adhere to the theme.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was kind of cool. So it was a themed Teach a Trick, which, it wasn't just a free-for-all. It was just a bunch of tricks.
Right.
So it was cool.
And but there were people who came to you each year. I mean, in other words, what we always did was to say, what do we want to vote on as being the subject for next year?
Yeah.
And then one of the most votes, or then you would tell, like, here are the top five, what are we going to do, or whatever.
Right. Yeah, I would try to. It was hard to come up with themes after a while, because I've done it for quite a while. Mm-hmm. I'm going to guess at least 10. And, you know, so we'd have a list of stuff that didn't make it the previous year.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them I would go, well, I'm going to make an executive decision to delete that one. That's just not one that I feel is a good one. You know, some of them will come to mind here as possibilities. But, yeah, you're right. I would put out a list of like 10, and then everybody could circle 3, which I thought was better than 1. Right, circle 3,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and then we'll just add them up. And I was very democratic. I never cheated or just did what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I added them up. And sometimes it would come down to like just a few, 2 votes more for that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just go, well, this is the one that won, and that's it. And so now contact me if you want to be part of the session next year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then also tell me what you're going to do so we didn't get duplications or something.
Right. But then also you put those, because they submitted them in advance. It wasn't just once they got there saying, by the way, Mike, I've got something, because you put together a PDF.
Yeah, well, Pat used to do it just like, come and see me and, you know,
I'll put you in.
They might have even announced it the first day. If you have a trick that uses rubber bands, you know, come and see me.
Yeah.
And Pat could probably do the whole thing on any theme. That guy was so versatile, right? You could just name a theme, and he could just do an hour on that theme.
Yeah.
but it was fun. And
like the Cards Across. I remember that year was awesome.
Yeah.
I still do his routine from that.
Oh, yeah. Pat Page was a force to be reckoned with, man. I really missed the guy. So I had big shoes to fill when I got the job.
Mm-hmm.
But then we did do it the other way. We just went, okay, we're going to establish it, you know, this year for next year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could do the PDF, because these guys would send me a write-up or a video, and that way I could say, you don't have to take notes on this. These guys have given me PDFs or videos of what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so put your notepads away. If you find something you like, just remember it. Go to the website. download the PDF, and you can revisit the trick.
Right.
Because it's so, I mean, even this, you know, even this convention that we're at right now,
yeah, we're,
so many things have happened that I know I'm going to forget.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, it's just like, yeah, it's just kind of vanishing into, because you, the new thing comes, and then that dominates your attention. So I really like, lectures that you can watch again, you mm-hmm. know, and revisit. And in fact, we have videos of the sessions that Jimmy takes at Vectors. So sometimes I'll just say, are you guys all cool with me just posting the video of the session with a password, and only the guys at Vectors can look at it?
Right.
And now you can totally revisit it and be there and see the video.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we've been doing lately. And I think it's been generating a lot of interest in that session.
And you've been, we were talking briefly yesterday about your Mall of Magic and the idea that you had about that from the beginning with, is how that you were posting things on this. So for people who are looking for some of this information that might be publicly available, it's out at mallofmagic.com. Is that right?
Yeah, well, that's my website, www.mallofmagic.com, mm-hmm. as it sounds. And there's some photos of conventions that are up for grant, that are anybody can look at. And then there's some password protected stuff, like where I'm teaching some things for lectures, or I think I offer them to the IBM membership that might read my column in the Linking Ring.
But you got some write-ups on there too, from reviews of the previous conventions, right?
I think there's all kinds of stuff. I haven't, you know, I'm sure there are. I did review a couple of conventions. I think I reviewed them for Magic Magazine
right,
one time.
Way back.
And I did one for the Marlowe convention that the Second Deal guys put on. Jason Alford mm-hmm. had a group, you know, an internet group called The Second Deal. And one of the really cool conventions, all these young guys that were too young to have ever known Marlowe, but of course you know the name.
Sure.
And they're all card maniacs. And so they brought in Ackerman and Rackerbaumer and Drawn and
Simon
Aronson and Solomon and people that were intimate friends and
yeah.
students of Marlowe to talk about it and to do lectures and shows. And it was just a wonderful convention. So cool to see these guys so interested in.
Had they done more than one, or was it just one-off?
They just did the one. Now Rackerbaumer and Solomon put on a couple of their own conventions that were Marlowe, what would you call it? Retrospectives, I guess you could call it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was the same basic group, you know, Don England, and, you know, I got to go because I was hanging around at the table as much as I could back in the days, and John, who I really have such great respect for, Alan Ackerman. All these guys are my heroes, and,
yeah.
And to have them, to be able to become friends with those guys and to have that common mentor in Ed Marlowe was really just great. So there's been two that Rackerbaumer and Solomon put on, and then the one that
Jason in Chicago?
One in Chicago, one in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's where John lives. Yeah,
yeah, John's in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And they both were great. Everybody came in. I think I did a lecture at one of them. John, you know, got... What a nice honor to do a lecture for that group, you know, because
yeah.
now you don't have to worry about whether they know how to do an Elmsley count or a top change. It's like, no, these guys are all experts.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like, again, some of these close-up conventions, people who come, you don't have to go into the details. You know, they pretty much know all the basics.
Right.
Yeah, kind of a thing, which is great about Vectors.
Yeah.
Convention where everybody seems like who are invited, they wouldn't be there if they hadn't met certain qualifications.
Yeah, yeah, that's
so
true.
They've already proven their bona fides,
right.
You know, basically, so to speak.
Absolutely, which is nice to know when you're doing a lecture, you
right.
want to know your audience. You don't want to come on strong with heavy stuff for an
right.
audience of beginners.
Right, which is what sometimes when you go to a general convention, and I mean like an IBM or SAM, where, you know, you have people who are from all different kind of backgrounds, people who are just getting started, you have youngsters to older people, you've got full-time professionals, part-time people who are kid show magician, mentalists,
right.
sage guys,
yeah.
you know, so yeah, they
That's
have different interests and different things,
sure.
so you have to be general in your lectures.
Yep, it's true. It's always a struggle to figure out what to do. I'm doing a lecture next Sunday, is it about a week, you know,
mm-hmm.
from this convention. I've got
okay.
my first live lecture.
That'll
in
be
a
November
long time.
Of 2021 here.
Yeah,
yeah,
yep, just coming up in a week and
yeah.
for the Grand Rapids group. And, you know, so I'm just starting to think what would be good material for these guys. I tend to shift my lecture around a lot and
mm-hmm.
not have one set of notes that's the lecture and that's
right.
what I'm going to do. I always end up thinking, well, you got this new trick that's really cool. Why won't you just show that trick?
Right.
And I've gone with like an eNotes now, so it's a PDF file. Mm-hmm. And that way I can just pick and choose what to drop in there and just go, well, you know, I'm going to leave this one out, put that one in, and there's the notes for those guys. That's what Max Maven used to do that. He used to have like a different set of notes for every lecture the guy did, I think. He did three lectures in Chicago, and each one had a different set of notes.
Each of the Chicago groups?
Well, I think he did three. I don't know. I guess it was different groups. It was like back, you know, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, or something. Just like three in a row,
right?
At different groups, and all the notes were different.
Wow.
I mean, and I think I've got, you know, he's besides all of his other publications. That's I think I'm pretty sure that if he does a lecture, he just makes the notes for that lecture and then moves to the next lecture.
Because there have been some lectures I've seen him duplicate things. Yes.
He may have, maybe he has the blankety lecture, whatever the topic is that he's an expert on something.
Right.
But I know that in Chicago he did different ones, and I've been to a couple other lectures of his, and you know I kind of assumed that maybe he just always did that, but I guess you're saying he does have some set lectures.
He does have some set that he's done for a general kind of a thing, and when I've seen it done in another general convention, it was like, I just saw this, I mean, like trick for trick almost over there. And they're good, you know, certainly. It's just, I've been there, done that, seen that, and I thought, I know he's got a lot of other ton of stuff. It's just, anyhow, your book of, was it Tesseract?
That's the new one. Tesseract with a CT,
Okay. Explain what a Tesseract is, which I think is kind of interesting because with the Marvel Comics and the Avengers, now we know what a Tesseract is, but go ahead and explain it from your standpoint.
Oh, okay. Do we have like a couple hours here?
Well, being a science teacher.
Okay, all right. there's kind of the long haul where you can get into some details about how many faces, edges, vertices. It's basically built up this way, so hopefully this will make some sense. But we don't want to lose the audience here.
Okay.
But if you take a square, and you move the square vertically, so the square is in the
you're talking about in a three-dimensional.
Yeah, we're going to go from two dimensions to three.
Okay.
So the square is on the floor, but now we're going to move it up toward the ceiling. Okay. That's the third dimension, right? Because the floor has two dimensions, length and width, and now we move it up the same distance as its side. So now you have a cube.
Right.
Now we're going to make these just a framework. So it's not like a solid thing. It's just a framework made out of like drinking straws that make the cube.
Yes.
Now here's the thing to get to the Tesseract. You have to move all those points perpendicular to all three directions, length, width, and height. Now if you can point where that direction is, Scott, and move your hand in that direction, it will disappear from our universe. This is a little bit wacky, so I won't belabor it because people might be thinking, well, maybe I should change the channel now. Oh, this is really cool. Stay with us. Stay with us. Don't change. So anyway, this is basically it. You move all the points of the cube, just like you did the square. All the points of the square moved vertically, tracing out those new vertical edges and arriving at the top with all of its four edges, and that made the cube. Now, if you move all those in this elusive direction called the fourth dimension, which we can't point in because we're three-dimensional.
Right.
Anyway, when you do that, that cube now moves into becoming a tesseract, a four-dimensional hypercube. That's it.
Okay.
Now, the cool thing is, just like you can take a cube, and if you take a light source above the cube and cast a shadow back down on the floor, it'll look like a square inside of a square, and little connections between the corners of the square, but it's flat. It's on the floor.
It's two-dimensional.
The shadow of a cube is
two-dimensional. Correct.
And you can actually look at it and go, I see why it would look like that.
So, because the perspective of the light to the shadow.
And
to
actually,
the floor.
If you change the perspective, then the shadow changes.
Exactly. So
if you're directly above the center of the cube, you get this nice symmetrical thing. But if you move it around, it will get weird on the floor.
Right.
Same thing with the Tesseract. There's going to be a viewpoint where if you change the light source direction, it'll get wacky looking. But you can actually create a shadow of a tesseract, and I have a model of it in my office. It looks like a cube, a smaller cube inside of a larger cube, and the smaller one's completely centered inside the larger one, and the corners of the small cube have lines going to the corners of the large cube.
I'm with you. So it looks like it's suspended inside there.
Yeah, that's the shadow of a tesseract, because that's three-dimensional, right? It exists in our universe,
Okay, yes.
That's what you would get if you projected from the fourth dimension into the third dimension and said, here's the shadow of the tesseract. Just like if there was two-dimensional creatures, you could say, well, I want to show you what a cube is, but I can't because you're two-dimensional. I can show you what the shadow of a cube is. And they'll go, okay, so... And then, anyway, we can get lost in the weeds, but that's basically covers it.
So the listener would obviously ask at this point, what's a tesseract got to do with magic? And your lecture notes and your book.
That was the trick. I wanted to name the book Tesseract because I just like it, and I just think it's cool to talk about tesseracts in the fourth dimension. And then I had to think, well, why am I doing that for this magic book? And I came up with kind of a way to bring it in, which was that magic, in a way, takes place in the fourth dimension, right?
You mean in people's minds that they can't describe, or what?
They can't see it, right? So in other words, if I were to be able to move into the fourth dimension, I would disappear from this room.
I'm with you, okay.
And I would just be, like, gone.
Yeah.
So in a sense, what we're doing is happening in the fourth dimension in the sense that spectators are not aware of it. They do not see what's going on. Like when Garrett did his lecture tonight and turned around to show that guy
Garrett Thomas,
all the crazy
by the way,
stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Garrett Thomas, incredible lecture. What was going on behind the scenes, it was like getting to the fourth dimension and going, that's what's going on in the fourth dimension. We're unaware of it in the third dimension down here. Mm-hmm. So magic, in a certain sense, is, you know, it does take place in people's minds, but I think of it as sort of an invisible place that where we do things that they don't know about. And so that was the best I could do to hook into why is the book called Tesseract?
Okay.
How is it related to magic?
And do you have a trick that's called Tesseract or something in which you...
I did put about 7 pages in there where if you really want to get into the weeds, I'll take you for a deeper ride than we just took in terms of, what are the structure of the Tesseract?
Right.
How many corners must it have? How many edges does it have? How many faces does it have that are squares? And how many side cubes does it have?
It's multifaceted, like a diamond or more? Or
well, again, as soon as we try to visualize it, we're lost. You cannot visualize it. All you can do is you can tell
live
some of
it.
The features of it. You can see those features in the three-dimensional model that I was telling you about, the small cube inside the big cube with the edges going from the corners to the other corners.
Right.
That's what the shadow looks like. But we cannot even really imagine what's going on, because those lines that go from the corners of the small cube in the middle to the large cube on the outside, they're perpendicular to all the other ones. But when we look at it, we go, that's not perpendicular. That's like at a weird angle. That's not like a right angle. And that's because it's a shadow.
Shadow, right.
Mm-hmm. In the cube that you, the shadow of the cube that's on the floor, the lines that connect the corners, if you had my book, we'd be looking at a picture. So hopefully this is making a little bit of sense. They're perpendicular in the cube. The cube, everything's perpendicular, but in the shadow, they're not, because it distorts the angle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the same problem we have. We cannot imagine what a four-dimensional cube looks like.
I don't know why, but I feel like I'm talking to Sheldon Leonard from the Big Bang Theory about string theory or something.
Are you guys still out there? Are they still there?
Okay. Knock, knock. Thank you, Doctor.
All right.
I appreciate
you asked the question.
I did, and
you
I appreciate I did going into that, which goes back, I guess, to being the teacher that you were, because I think one of the beautiful things that I use all the time is the impromptu trick of science fiction of the soda straw.
Yeah, you asked me about that, I think, about teaching. Yeah, that's fine. That is a fun trick, and it's totally a physics trick.
Yeah.
Can they see it? Do you have a video of that where they can see it?
Yes, if they'll go to themagicwordpodcast.com. That is, I guess, on YouTube, so I can post that.
Yeah, post it, man. It's fine.
Okay. And that does it explain or just?
I don't have one that's an explanation of it that I put online because I didn't want to do it. Actually, it got onto Scam School. If you ever had seen
Brian
the
Brushwood's.
Guy, Brian Brushwood's Scam School, I got a call from him or an email, maybe it was.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, hey, can I use this science fiction thing in Scam School? I thought, well, that's really cool. I'd love to be part of Scam School. And I said, sure. And then he put my website on in Scam School. Oh, you can find more from Mike on here, which I thought was nice. But he explains it. So if you find it on Scam School, you can get the whole explanation. But it's an impromptu moving straw trick. No strings. It's very pure. and it definitely uses physics. We can talk about the method if you want to dig in there.
Yeah, I would, since we've already touched on it, if you don't mind, since it's out there a little bit, because I think it is such a strong trick, and it's something that's, you know, we really on this program don't talk about tricks, but this is something I think that is certainly within the skill level of any beginner. Yeah.
Do you want me to kind of try to make them visualize how to do it? I'm happy to
explain.
And the
effect,
So the effect is you take a straw out of the wrapper, you balance it on top of a salt shaker that has more or less a flat kind of top. It can't be pointy or you couldn't balance
it. It could be kind of roundish.
Yeah, or even a beer bottle, right, with a cap on it. Mm-hmm. You can put it on the cap. So you need something like that to stabilize it. And so the straw is, you know, balanced there. And then you just start moving your hands around, and that thing starts spinning in circles in different directions. It stops.
As if you're blowing on it.
As if you're blowing on it, but you can have people cover your mouth, or you can turn your head aside and prove that you're not doing that. But there's no invisible thread or any magnets or anything. It's just very organic. And it looks really cool. So I think, well, you liked it. So, you know,
I love it.
It's cool enough to actually do it.
it's an impromptu kind of a thing that you could do in restaurants. And I just did it last weekend for my twin granddaughters who are 11 years old. We were out to dinner. And my son said, that's what Big Pops just does. You know,
that's what Big Pops just does. He just does that stuff.
Yeah.
He's magic.
Yeah.
So explanation wise, in physics, we used to charge up a kind of a plastic rod by rubbing like a rabbit fur on it, or you know something that would puts a static charge on it. Mm-hmm. Now a conductor, you can't touch a conductor; it'll discharge the conductor. So if you had a metal rod that had a charge on it, as soon as you touch it, those charges will leave, and then you'll neutralize the rod. But something that's not a conductor, like plastic, you can create a charge on it that stays on the surface. And if you touch it at one place, you may lose a few charges that are in that vicinity, but all the charges won't rush out of there like they would if it was a fork or a knife or something made out of metal. Mm-hmm. If you charged a knife and then touched it, it would just be instantly discharged. So anyway, how can you put a charge on
That's why you get like kind of a quick spark, right?
You can get a spark, you know, in the winter when our bodies get charged up and you touch the doorknob.
When you're walking across the carpet.
Yeah, interesting fun fact. The voltage difference between ground, the doorknob, and your hand is 25,000 volts per centimeter that spark jumps.
Holy
so centimeter is about a half an inch. So if that spark jumps an inch, that's a 50,000 volt difference between your body and the door. But again, you know, if we don't want to do a physics, you know, lecture here, but voltage is not important as current is. Mm-hmm. So the good news for you why you don't get harmed by this giant voltage difference is that the amount of current that flows from your body to the doorknob is incredibly small. Mm-hmm. If it was big, that would be like the electric chair. Your body would be fried like a hot dog that cooks on, you know, electrically, and they stick it on two prongs and run a current through it. But anyway, to people can try this out at home, you get a straw. It has to be plastic, so there may be a window of opportunity that we still have with plastic straws.
Can't do it in California.
In fact, I want to check and see if maybe there is a way, if the cardboard ones work or whatever they're made out of. I haven't tried it, but it would be cool if it did work. But plastic works, so you get a straw at McDonald's. You want
wrapper.
A paper wrapper is the best. I think it actually can even work. People ask, does it work if it's a plastic wrapper?
And I don't think it works too well.
Okay, so you may be doing more experiments than I have with that. So you want paper, and now you want to extract the straw from the paper, but you want to do it this way. You want to squeeze with your left hand on the paper near the end that you're extracting. So you take off the cover at the end.
You tear off like about an inch at the end.
So that it's exposed at the right side. Moving to your left, your left hand, thumb underneath, fingers on top, near the plastic, squeeze the paper tight against the plastic. Mm-hmm. Deform the straw as much as possible. It's going to bounce back. It's not going to flatten it. Now, when you pull the straw out, you get a lot of friction.
You do it quickly.
You do it quickly and with maximum friction. That's what you really want is lots of friction. So don't go light on the straw.
Which is why you flatten it.
You want to just flatten it because you're going to get a lot of friction.
Right.
And that's going to maximize the charge. Yep, it's going to get surface area too. That's right. It's a good point. Because now that it's flat, you're getting more of the surface that you wouldn't get on the sides otherwise. That's exactly right. So you get a charge on the straw. Now you have to handle the straw a certain way. You want to put the straw between the index fingers of your hands. So imagine your two fingers are sticking out and the straw mm-hmm. runs from your left index finger to your right.
So you don't touch the straw, you don't pick it up by the middle. Once you stripped it and you're holding it by right. one end, you pull the paper away, you then put your finger on the end.
On each end. Opposite ends. You can orient it that way. Now, if you do touch it, you're not going to discharge it too much. I mean, you're still going to have plenty of charge on there. But the less touching, the better. But the reason that you have to do it that way, as you're setting it on the salt shaker, is if your hand is nearby, it's going to be attracted to your hand, mm-hmm. and it's going to follow your hand. So if one hand is close to it and the other hand isn't, it's going to follow the one hand as you move it away. So the fact that your fingers are touching the ends lets you set it right on the salt shaker, and now move your fingers directly along the line of the straw away. Don't move your hands perpendicular to the straw. Move your hands along the line of the straw away.
In the same plane.
Because you'll find immediately mm-hmm. if you don't do that right, it'll roll right off the salt shaker because mm-hmm. it's going to follow your hands.
But because of that static charge, it also is attached to the top of the salt shaker.
It does attach a little bit, too. That helps.
But you do try to center it, obviously.
You try to center it, and plus flattening it helps a little bit because it becomes elliptical and not, mm-hmm. and not cylindrical. So all that helps the cause. It could roll off. Just pick it back up using your fingertips again. Repeat it. Get it stabilized. Now, if you bring one hand near it, it'll just
within
roll.
About 2 or 3 inches.
Yeah, if you only bring one hand near it, mm-hmm. it'll just follow that hand and roll right off. So if you take the hand between you and the straw, bring it near the straw, it'll just come towards you and just roll right off. Mm-hmm. You really need to have both hands involved and have one hand on each side of the straw at opposite ends. I hope that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So the left end, let's say that your left hand is on between you and the straw on the left end, then your right hand needs to be on the other side of the straw on the right end. So one hand is on between you and the straw, the other hand is on the other side of the straw, about the same distance, good symmetry.
And your hand being kind of cupped in a way, but your fingers together.
Yep. Mm-hmm. The main thing is that your hand, your body's a good enough conductor that the straw is going to be attracted to a conductor, mm-hmm. and that's going to definitely get us into the weeds if we try to explain that. So we're right. just going to let that go as a fact of nature.
And it will go quickly, and then when you move your hands away...
Yeah, well, it'll start to move towards your hands. Mm-hmm. So you can move your hands away as it comes towards them, and it'll continue to go towards your hands, and then move your hands away, and it'll just keep spinning. Mm-hmm. Now, to stop it, you put your hands on the opposite side, and it'll be attracted in that direction, and you'll slow it down and reverse, mm-hmm. and you can just start playing. So the thing you should do before you unleash this at Denny's at 2 in the morning is play with it and get it under control and go, okay, I got it. I know how to make this thing dance around and spin around and not let it fall off. And, mm-hmm. you know, then you can have a lot of fun with it because it's real simple. Take the end of the straw off, maximum friction, pull it out, use two fingers, set it on the salt shaker, put one hand on either side. I hope that made sense because we're only on audio track here. It's fun.
Well, I may have been responsible for sharing that with Brian and showing that to him and he thought
he did ask me. So
yeah, I said, it came from Mike Powers. You need to talk to Mike.
Yep.
Which is why that he was directed over there then to you then as well. Did you come up with that as a science teacher or as a magician, or how did that come about?
Really as a magician. I mean, you know, in physics, it came from the physics, but in physics class, you have a heavier object. The straw is the light object. Mm-hmm. Your hands are heavy. The hands aren't going to move very much. The straw is going to move because it's very light. In physics class, you have these little styrofoam balls that hang from a thread about a foot. They're about half an inch across or a little bit, maybe a quarter of an inch across, and they're coated with aluminum. So they can hold a charge. So now you take the rabbit fur and you charge up a plastic rod. Mm-hmm. Now, that plastic rod is really heavy, and it's not going to move very easily. You can't
like a lucite kind of a solid.
Yeah, like lucite. A lucite thing, something like that. So you can't balance that and have it move because it's just too heavy. The
Correct.
Force isn't going to be big enough to make it move. So in physics, we don't do that. We use that to attract the ball. So now the ball being the light
thing,
because
it's lighter. Gotcha.
And it's a conductor. It has aluminum on it. So it becomes a conductor, a very light coating of aluminum on the styrofoam. Now that'll be attracted to the rod, and you get this really funny thing because it gets pulled over to the rod, which is kind of like magic already. Why would that be be coming over. It doesn't have any charge on it. Why is it attracted to the rod? Right. Well, that's what we're skipping over because we can get deep into the weeds on that. Anyway, it will. Then it touches the rod, picks up some charge. Now it has the same charge as the rod, which makes the rod repel it because like charges repel. Mm-hmm. So now it jumps away from the rod. Now when you bring the rod towards it, it moves away from the rod. And significantly, you can get that thing at a 45-degree angle just by bringing the rod near it, and it keeps moving away.
Right.
And then you can touch the ball with your hand, discharge it. Now it'll be attracted to the rod again. So these are you demonstrate a number of things using these little gizmos in physics class. But then I realized, wow, if the rod was really light, it's the thing that would move. Instead of the heavy thing that's charged moving the light thing, which is the ball, you can now, that's where the straw idea came from. I thought, man, if we charge up the straw, it will move. It's very light. And then I put it on a salt shaker, and I went, this is really cool.
And did you actually at first time, I guess, take just a plastic straw and rub it with rabbit's fur or something, or did you?
No, I just tried the paper because remember there was the old comb and paper thing.
You would
charge up the comb and then it would pick up little pieces of paper.
Yeah.
I think you'd run it through your hair to get it charged up. There's a lot of ways to do it, but that it's the same principle that's operating there.
But like, another beautiful thing I think is when it's a nice little subterfuge after you've done that, someone says, let me try that, and you break this, or you bend the straw, which breaks the charge.
No, it doesn't, man.
Oh,
I thought when you're a physics teacher and somebody says something like that's going to work, then you go, I don't think it does. But then you're worried that you just are overlooking something and you're going to look like a bonehead by disagreeing. Mm-hmm. But I went out on a limb. Somebody did this at a lecture. Said, no, you just bend the straw and then the charge disappears. And I just thought, there's just no reason that the charge would disappear by doing that. I just going, I can't believe it. So we tried it, and it didn't work. Now, if you tried it and it did work, then I may be going to have to go revisit my principles of physics here. But it really shouldn't work. The way you can discharge it is just with your hand. But because the charge,
wiping with your hand,
you pretty much have to wipe
it
through your hand.
And then hand it to someone.
And then you can hand it to someone. So my way of doing it at Denny's was, once you start that thing spinning, people are going, what the hell's going on over there? Mm-hmm. So you've got their attention. But then there's the guy that thinks, oh, I bet I could do that if I just did the same thing he's doing. So the cool thing is, establish that you're not using your breath, do it, discharge it using your hand, set it back up, and then leave while it's sitting on the salt shaker. And that joker is going to come over and go, hey, watch me. And it's not going to work, which is great.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's true. I was about to say also, I find it's difficult for it to actually balance again back on the salt shaker without that charge.
You're right. It is. And that's, it's not a flaw because you can do it, but you might drop it a few times.
Right.
And you're right. And so it is
harder.
It has
to be perfectly balanced.
That's why the flatter you can make that straw, but they're so resilient. They don't want to be flat, even when you try to make them flat. So it's a struggle.
In the kind of magic, again, that you do, it's mainly card magic. And
I do a lot of cards.
And you are have always been really a part-time professional, never really a full-time.
Absolutely.
Trying to make a career of this.
I've never been full-time.
Yeah. And just an inventor. I mean, you're kind of like, John Bannon and many of the other guys, it seems like, who just are thinkers and have come up with ideas and have put out books and tricks and things.
Yeah, that's right. I like that.
You turn down shows?
I do turn down shows sometimes. You know, my experience as a performer is that I'm not dying to be on stage, but I realize it's a performing art, and when I've worked in restaurants a lot, and enjoyed it, and then sometimes the stand up show I'm a little bit more like I really just want to do close up magic, but then the stand up show comes in and I've got a show not for magicians. I would never do it at a magic convention. It'd be like, this is all the stuff everybody does, so but it plays. You know, the people seem to like the show.
Sure.
But when I do a show, I'm kind of, I don't know, do I want to do a show? I don't know, maybe I should just, play with my cards here for a while and not do that show. But then I'll do it, and then I'll go, that was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I really, at the end of the day, when I do one, I enjoy it. But I tend to think, I don't know if I really want to do so many shows. And I know lots of people, I wish I had more desire to be on stage. I don't think it's anything wrong with wanting to be on stage. Right. I think you need to be, if you're going to be a performer, you need to want to be on stage.
Right. Well, your significant other, Maria.
Yeah.
I can never pronounce her last name right. Schreiber? Schreiber?
No. One more try. Oh, wait a minute. Do you speak German?
No.
Okay. All right.
Schreiber.
S-C-H-W-I-E-T-E-R.
Schweitzer. Schweiter.
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 So the German pronunciation of I-E goes to E, E-I goes to I. So if it was E-I-T-E-R, it would be Schweiter, but it's Schweiter.
Because it's I-E.
Right. Schweiter. And then you can remember because she's the Schweiter one.
Schweiter of the two of you.
Schweiter of the two of us.
Yes. I got you. All right. Okay.
She apologize for that.
She does a lot of magic then also. And I've seen her perform like at 4F, and she does
she
a stand-up show that is just brilliant.
She has done, she's got her PhD, which means she's performed three times for the illustrious group at 4F. Mm-hmm. I wish I had video of the first one because... Man, Howie Schwartz, it was just really fun. I don't have video of that, but I think I've had video of the other two times she performed. And Roger Klaus came up and said, "Boy, you did some tough stuff." I mean, she was doing the Dingle no lap switch, the Gallo pitch in a coin routine. You know, she was doing showing some definite knowledge,
some real chops.
Now,
right?
She's a Chavez graduate from Neil Foster.
Before you met?
Before we met. Yep. She's been in magic longer than I have.
Hmm. Was she the one that got you involved in magic? Really?
No. I had gone on my own, but we met at Abbott's Magic Convention.
Really?
In 1993, we just revisited this because she had her 70th birthday a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. October 23rd. And I kind of revisited, you know, how we met and things like that to talk to her family. And how did you guys meet? And tell the long story. But no, she's a magician in her own right, and she studied that manipulation stuff that Dale Salwak does. If you ever see Dale Salwak, he teaches the Chavez course,
yes.
I think.
Yes.
And performs, you know, the billiard balls, the mm-hmm. cigarettes. I guess you do cigarettes still, maybe. Card fan stuff. Thimbles, A Miser's Dream. She had all the stuff that they used. And she had Neil Foster. Probably most people don't know who Neil Foster is, but he was quite a really, really good magician. And she should get more, there should be more knowledge of this guy.
And he was in Colon, Michigan. Is that where
yes.
she took lessons
yes,
from?
Yes, she drove Colon? From Champaign-Urbana area mm-hmm. Abbott's to Colon,
which is probably about a four-hour drive.
It's a good four. No, it might even be more. It might be four plus. I'm thinking it's.
Well, she was Champaign, you say?
Yeah,
because it's about 2.5 hours or so, let's say, to Chicago, and then about 5 hours.
Well, I know Champaign to where we are now in Indiana is about 3 plus, and then it's about an hour and a half to Abbott's. Mm. There may be a shorter way, so I'm going to say four. Yeah, four to 4.5 hours, and she, you know, religiously. I think they went all weekend. I think you stayed overnight for like 3 days, and she was working full time, so it worked with her schedule. They had to make it. You know, they had to do that to get people to be able to go for, I don't know, 6 months or something. It was like every weekend, and then go home and practice,
right.
And come back and have Neil critique you and move you forward through mm-hmm. the course.
What was her long-term goal at the time? And was she wanting to be a professional, or she was just wanting to do it as a hobby, or do some shows?
No, she did. She was president of her ring. She did a lot of shows in the Champaign area. She had, you know, they would just put together fun stuff. Of course, being a woman in magic is rare even these days.
Mm-hmm. But even
less
earlier,
rare.
Yeah.
But even earlier, she was really, you know, one of very few women in magic, mm-hmm. and she just loved it. She likes the challenge of. Just a challenge in general. I mean, the fire department had an opening, and she applied for it, even though she wasn't going to take the job, just to see if she could pass the physical
wow.
and written tests, which she did.
Mm-hmm.
They would have hired her, and she said, "Well, I just wanted to see if I could do it."
Wow. Okay.
And well, I'll just throw one more thing in there as to give you more perspective on Maria. When I met her. She was walking down the sidewalk wearing a black miniskirt.
Mm-hmm.
I could go into more elaborate details about my thoughts at that moment, but mm-hmm. anyway, she was very attractive. And her friends were saying, "Oh, here comes Maria." So I'm going, "Oh, wow." So they introduced me to Maria, and I had seen her at a magic convention one other time. So the first thing this guy says is, "You know, Maria hunts bears." This is a bear hunter.
What?
I'm not sure why he said that, but so my line was, well, you know, I don't think I would never kill a creature of the woods. And I'm thinking, why would you say that when you would like to meet this person and make a good impression?
Right.
So I immediately said, well, I'm not a vegetarian, so I guess, you know. She goes, well, you know, we didn't just kill it to have a trophy. We the indigenous people of America, the hunting buffalo, they used everything. They used the hide. They made jewelry. They used the meat.
Right.
And she said, I wanted to think that I could do that if I had to. I went, this is pretty cool chick.
Wow, I should say.
So she hadn't killed a bear then, but while we were married, she went to Canada 3 times, and the third time finally got her bear, came home. She had field dressed the bear herself.
Wow.
Brought the skin back, took parts that made jewelry, had meat, and, you know, we had bear chili for a while. Anyway, I'm just making the case that she's an extraordinary person.
Man, I should say so. That's an interesting story. I didn't know all that about her.
Not so much about magic, but yeah. I just had to throw that in.
Well, as far as what you want to still do with magic and what you've done kind of with it in the past, did you, by the way, I know when I've talked with some other people who have been school teachers, some were showing magic in classes and some kind of kept it hidden so their students didn't know they were even magicians because they kind of were underground guys for whatever reason they just wanted to keep it quiet. Right. In your case, as I recall, your students definitely knew that you were a magician.
Oh, man, it is a great thing to have in terms of a carrot. In other words, hey, guys, you know, hey, show us some magic. Well, let's do this. If you guys all get this work done and there's 5 minutes left, then I'll do a trick.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a great way to get them motivated, you know, sometimes. I mean, you know, most of my students were pretty motivated, but it was just that extra thing of like, okay, we get a trick if we get this done. And then, of course, I got a chance to try out the trick 7 times that day at every class.
Class, right.
So it was a win-win for everybody. And, you know, it was just 3 minutes and you'd get a card trick down, right? So I wasn't wasting.
And the principal or whoever, the administration.
Oh, they thought it was good. I mean, they weren't saying you need to spend that 3 minutes, you know, drilling times tables or something.
Yeah.
No, they recognized that was a good little tactic to keep interest going and motivation.
This was high school you were teaching?
Yeah, I taught high school for many years, and then when I retired, I went and taught at Holy Cross College, so that's why I get to say I was a physics professor, which I was for one year. So,
yeah, it counts.
But it sounds cool, though.
Professor.
You don't have to call me Professor, Scott. We're all...
Just Mr. Powers.
Mr. Powers is fine.
Which I think Powers is a perfect name to talk about physics, you know.
Yeah, and magic. I mean, Jeff McBride, we were talking to Jeff one time, and he goes, you know, you got this name, dude. Why aren't we doing something with it? I'm going, I don't know what to do with it. Magical Powers, what am I going to do? It's just, I have a T-shirt that says Magical Powers.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, I felt like if I wore it at the convention, it would be like, oh, man, you know, Magical Powers, really? You know, it seemed like it's kind of a...
little hokey.
Little hokey, exactly. So I thought, well, you know, what am I going to do? Mike Powers? Oh, who cool, he's the Powers of Magic. Yeah, it's just, I never got it going. If you have some ideas, lay them on me. I'm ready in my old age here to use it, but I've never found a way.
Yeah, Powers of Magic.
Powers of Magic.
Yeah.
The Powers That Be.
Yeah, I know there are some magicians who have some great names. There's a friend of ours in Houston, Bill King, and he's a magician. And you'd think he'd be doing a lot of Bill tricks, you know, being the king. You know,
right, yeah.
He does a lot of cards. He does a lot of really good stuff. And there was a fella I worked with many years ago, not a magician, but I always thought, what a great name for a magician. His name was Jack Marvel.
Yeah.
And
I think that, you know, the marvelous Marvel, I would get more ideas like, yeah, that's going to work. And Powers seems like it should work. So if anybody out there wants to email me, you know, go to the Mall of Magic and say, hey, Mike, I got this great idea for you.
Yeah.
So far, I'm just haven't found it.
Well, as I start to kind of wrap up, I want to go back to the beginning in which we were talking about the Mall of Magic and about how that you were kind of one of the earlier people in technology and helping to develop magic on the internet and what your idea was when you had designed and applied for that domain.
Right. Yeah, well, the original idea was to make a site that was literally a Mall of Magic online. And I envisioned that the home page would be like the map that you see at the mall, where you go, where is the, you know, the tobacco store, the tobacco store that didn't even exist anymore.
Why did I come up with that? Where's JCPenney's?
Where's JCPenney's? Where's the movie theater? Yeah. Whatever, you know, all the various places in there.
Where's Spencer's?
And, yeah, Spencer's. So you know, you have the map, and I thought, well, this map would be, where's Lee Asher's magic store is over here. You know, I wanted to get niche people that had their own products, mm-hmm. that wanted to be online and had their own website. And all I would have to do was link and say, oh, you wanted to go to Lee's magic store. Well, click right there and you go to his, and then you're linked to his site. And then, you know, as a business opportunity, then I would get some sort of, you know, remuneration for having sent the business
or whatever,
over there.
Right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So you get something out of doing that, which is very common these days with advertising, right? And then I thought the movie theater would be where you have videos of magic at. Mm-hmm. And so you could visit the theater, what's playing, and, you know, it would be a video of somebody doing magic. And so you'd have all these hooks, and then you keep changing it. So the theater would always have new stuff, and people would want to come back. And it is a good idea, but I just kind of just went, well, it's my website. And
it's something that would take a lot of maintenance and some marketing, and you had another full-time
thing. I had a full-time job. Yeah, you get these ideas, and then you go, it's for somebody who has the freedom to do it,
more
who
time.
Wants to create a business, and that's their gig, is to create mm-hmm. a business. I think it would have been a good thing. It still could be a good thing if somebody wanted to do it.
Well, around that time, I remember Dodd Vickers, who was my predecessor, really got me into the podcasting business with his, he had a thing called the linking page, which I think if you still go to the linking page, it now directs you over there to his Magic Newswire.
Okay.
But the linking page was initially intended to be just that he had, when you would go there, if you had a website, you just posted, then he would have like a hot link that you would click on that. It would take you to the Mall of Magic or to scottwells.com or wherever.
Yeah, it's kind of similar, but I wanted to key it off of a map of the mall.
I understand. It was
rather
schematic,
than
actually.
Just a set of links, mm-hmm. which would, it would be the same thing ultimately, but it would just feel like, well, I'm at the mall, there's the map. But I think those things are very valuable. I think there's a couple people doing that, you know, that come out once a month with a list of new things that are worth looking at and stuff. Is that what he's doing there with places you can visit by just clicking on a
that
link?
That was, well, yeah, but it, I think it left his website, but it just used his as, again, it was the linking page in which
right.
you would be linked to go to someone else's page.
Right, so you visit this one and then there's a bunch of links
right.
to other places.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
Correct.
That's good stuff.
Which was essentially what you were trying to do, except yours is going to be more of a visual thing that
yeah.
would be.
The links would just be the same thing, but you would think, oh, there's the map, and I'll click on here mm-hmm. to find out about it.
But it'd be something, maybe I could see now, it'd be more almost like a game. You could have something that would be more interactive. You can kind of enter these rooms or whatever. That
sure.
Could, I mean, again, like a video game. I mean, if someone who was a gamer could design something like that could
right.
have some interest.
Well, I will sell the mallofmagic.com URL for $100,000 to anybody who wants to really do it. Or
go.
Maybe just a cut of the action.
Yeah. Yeah, call you and you can negotiate.
Yeah, call me.
Yeah, yeah. And you've been attending magic conventions for a long time as well.
We
were talking about 4F earlier, but
yeah.
is there one that you really like more than another or something that you would never miss?
Well, you know, it's funny because I was about to make a do some talking about the first convention I went to. In fact, I was talking to Mike Amar today about the Desert Magic Seminar 1980 at the Aladdin Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think you're really asking me about which conventions do I like to go to. So this is a little bit different. I can just focus on that. I love the Magi Fest, Fectors. Dan Block has a convention. I love Trix convention that we're at right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the ones that I don't.
Does Dan
want to
still
miss.
Have that convention?
I think he did. I think he had it this year. It was a little tough on attendance because
yeah.
of COVID issues mm-hmm. and stuff. But
what's the name of his convention?
I think it's the Buffalo Get Together.
Okay, because I know it's very small, like about 52 people or something.
Yeah, well, his concept was to do something like Fechter's was at the very beginning, mm-hmm. which would be maybe
a round table.
At most, you know, 70 people. No, he was going to limit it to 50. It was called the Buffalo 52.
Yeah.
And then one year he had 54 because there's two jokers in the mm-hmm. deck, you know. Yeah. And I think he would, you know, I don't think he's really thinking I'm going to turn people away at this point.
Yeah, he invited me to that early on, and I just was kind of, at the time, didn't have the time to do that. But
it's fun. He gets, what he's done is gotten people to lecture that you don't see very often. Mm-hmm. Now, some of these guys maybe have come out. He got Jared Kopp 1 year before you yeah. knew who he was. Now he's getting a lot of notoriety, right. which he deserves. But this is a very young version of him at the beginning, and really cool. And he got Ernest Eric, which was a real coup, because I don't know how many lectures Ernest Eric did. But to see this guy do the stuff from the book, Forces Unseen book, wow, that was something to see that.
You know who'd be cool to see and hear would be Steranko.
Oh, sure. There's stuff like that. Now, is Steranko still around?
Yes, he is. Yeah, he's still around. I think he's really, of course, more of a comic book guy or a graphic novel
right.
artist, of course.
Okay.
But yeah,
that would be really cool.
He's a friend of Mark D'Souza's. I know they
okay.
have gotten together. So
well, that would
be great.
You know,
they brought him out of retirement
it,
as
it
far
would be
as
cool.
doing something. But anyhow, yeah. so one of your favorite conventions, going back to that, was the Desert Magic Seminar back in the 80s?
Well, that was my first convention.
Oh.
So when you say magic conventions, that's what got me fired up about, I mean, magic for a few years at that point. But it was 1980, and it's probably too long a story to tell at this point in our interview, but it was just, I met Mike Amar there. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew who he was at that point, really. Daryl, Alan Ackerman, who I did know who
Paul
he was.
Paul Harris, probably.
Paul Harris. Mm-hmm. Vernon and Slidini
the
were there.
Magic Hedonist, was that back then?
I don't know if the Hedonists had, yeah, that, I mean, that's the group, right?
Yeah, pretty much who you named.
Daryl, Mike, and who were and Adam Fleischer.
Adam Fleischer.
Adam
yeah.
Fleischer, I think, were the Magic Hedonists.
Yeah.
That was a great concept. They wrote yeah. like a book and financed their just goofing around in
yeah,
Hawaii
all over the
for
world
a couple
and
weeks or
yeah.
something.
And the idea was to work as little as possible and make as much as possible.
Yeah, and you know, and they all did pretty well. I mean, that you know, Mike yeah. and Daryl both did great. Adam, I don't know, you know, what happened to him at the end of the day. He had some good work with the New York Magic Symposium. That
right.
was a great. Do you ever do any of those?
I did go to one of those.
Oh, yeah. Those were fabulous. Mm-hmm. There was so many, mm-hmm. you know, good ones. And those were the days where there wasn't a convention every week, you know, as well.
Right.
So, yeah, that was a great convention. We could talk for hours about
yeah.
that one.
Mm-hmm.
But,
lots of good conventions to have attended. Well, as we do wrap up then now, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So I always like to conclude by asking, what is your phrase? What is your philosophy of life? What's your...
My philosophy of life?
Yeah, your word or words.
Yeah, so this is now we're down to like 1 minute to go and I've got to encapsulate it.
Yeah, what is it that gets you going every day?
You know, I it's hard to say. It's a really tough question. I want you pause this and give me 5 minutes and we'll get back in. No, I think it's just I'm just enjoying myself so much in every way. Life is really good. We're traveling. I've got a wonderful wife and magic is just rocking it. Mm-hmm. I play my guitar. I'm retired. That helps a lot to make
take a nap
the day.
If you want.
I can take two naps if I want. So life is just really good, and mm-hmm. I just wake up, you know, ready for the next day.
So just face each day with great expectations.
Well, you know, okay, it's trite to say it, but carpe diem, right? Seize the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that was from the great movie. That means it has been around, but Robin Williams popularized it, Dead Poets Society. Mm-hmm. That was what he was trying to tell his students. Carpe diem, seize the day. He shows them a photograph from the 30s, says, see these guys in this photograph? These are all high school kids in the 90s or something in this movie. He says, these guys are all pushing up daisies, boys.
Mm-hmm.
You're here. Carpe diem. Mm-hmm. Seize the day. Don't waste it.
Love it. That's a good way to end.
Okay.
Mike, thanks very much. You're a good buddy. It's always good to see you.
Good to see you, man.
Glad we have these opportunities and conventions in particular.
Lots of fun talking to you.
Yeah, yeah. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Mike Powers. This is Scotty L.
After every episode, I always thank the guest and appreciate the time that they spend with me. And it is no less heartfelt, Mike, for you to have shared this wisdom with us. Wow, what an incredible conversation this was. It was so much fun to sit down with you, and thank you for opening up and being just as sharing as you were. But I know you're just that kind of guy. And so now those people who may not have known you so well know more about you and know what a sharing guy you are. And so thanks again. This has been wonderful. And I mentioned early on at the beginning of this podcast that I wanted to close with some resolutions. And another friend of mine who was a guest on the Magic Word podcast some time ago was Dal Sanders. And Dal is a past president, the national president of the Society of American Magicians. And because the SAM is going to be having their convention coming up in Las Vegas later this month in January, I thought it appropriate to list some of the things that he had pointed out. He also is among so many things that Dal is involved with. He also publishes the Magic Across Texas newsletter. And he ended the recent newsletter with some observations and some resolutions, which I'm going to share here now. I typically don't like to read something that was particularly written by somebody else, but in this particular case, I think these are quite cogent and most relevant to this new year. So please bear with me. A new year is a new beginning. It almost feels like a new birth. As this new year begins, we often feel that we need to make changes in our life, start on a new path, do new things, and say goodbye to old habits, problems, and difficulties. Often, we start making new plans and new resolutions. The big question is, can we keep those resolutions? Can we follow through with those plans? Can we break those old habits as we establish new ones? There are tons of books, blogs, videos, and seminars on being successful with keeping your New Year's resolution, and I'll add my 24 cents, adjusted for inflation. What follows are 10 steps that I think you must take to be the magician that you've always wanted to be. Number one, think for yourself. Don't listen to the advice of other magicians who are just getting started themselves. If you listen, you'll hear a lot of what my wife Cindy calls baloney sausage, when she really means bull. Well, you know what she means. Much of this advice starts with the words, what I do is, usually this hot air is useless, and sometimes it can be worse than useless. Number two, attend your local magic clubs. Take classes, go to workshops, lectures, and conventions. There are two very good reasons for this. First, you'll learn a lot from working pros, and secondly, you'll meet people with like interests. Since magic is a business of networking and constant collaboration, it's a good idea to get started on this immediately. Number three, find a decent place to live. Living in a garret is all right if you're a French impressionist painter, but living like a starving artist is a good way to become a starving artist and stay that way for a long time. Unlike painters, magicians are rarely discovered after they're dead. Four, be like Elvis and TCB, that is, take care of business. What this means is looking out for your finances in a realistic way, budgeting for your career needs, saving for a rainy day. I'm surprised at how many people think it doesn't rain in magic land. It does, and often. You should always act like a responsible business person. Even if you're not a responsible business person, act like you are. Number five, take care of yourself. Stay healthy, eat well, exercise, drive carefully, and don't ingest too much. That means food, drink, or drugs. Six, relax. Getting your magic career started is probably going to take a while, and there might be some pain involved. Keep in mind that pain is inevitable. Misery is optional. Breathe deeply. Take up a hobby outside of magic. Pay attention to the rest of the world. Anxiety, frustration, and worry will not make things go any faster. Number seven, be nice to others. This sneaky ploy works in all walks of life. Number eight, don't be a critic. A lot of magicians think they will impress others with their, quote, critiques. They think that it's a way to look smart. Believe me, you won't impress and you won't look smart. You just come off as an amateur wannabe. Instead, do what stars of magic do. Smile and say things like, that was quite a show. Or, well, what can I say? Amazing. We see Penn and Teller compliment magicians on Fool Us every week, whether they're fooled or not. This is not called lying. It's called professional courtesy. Personally, I only risk being critical to those I know very well, and only then if they have asked me for my notes. Number nine, remember why you're here. You're here because you want to entertain people with magic. Open mic nights, working for experience, and other free shows, or almost free shows, are all fine to keep your instrument tuned, but they can easily become a way of life. If you want to make money being a magician, then spend an equal amount of time on securing paying gigs. Number 10, make a plan. I know this is a lot like homework, but the results of sitting down for a few hours and really determining what you want out of your magic career are truly amazing. Remember, a bad plan, vigorously executed, is better than no plan at all. And that was a quote from General George Patton. Well, 10 is a nice round number, but if you know me, that's Dal Sanders speaking here, again, I always turn it up to 11. So, do everything you can to be a happy person right now. If you think you can whine and complain today and then be happy someday in the future, I'm here to tell you that happiness just doesn't work that way. Putting off happiness until someday almost always guarantees that you will be unhappy forever. A wise man once pointed out, if you can't be happy where you are, it's a cinch you can't be happy where you ain't. All good advice, good resolutions. Thank you very much, Dal Sanders, for those resolutions and that food for thought as we go into 2022. And again, I want to wish each and every one of you a very happy and healthy and prosperous 2022. And so I think it's a good way to kind of end with the advice we were also given by Mike Powers this week. Stay well, get booked, and remember, carpe diem. Don't waste it. This is Scotty out.